The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
Howdy do, I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm his personal audience, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 85 of The Big Picture for the week beginning November 13. And coming up on today's show,
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. We found them, they're right here.
And one of the biggest sci-fi movie events of the year is here, Arrival. Hello.
Yes, we've arrived. What are we up to now? Episode 85.
And here's Sam again with us to make sure everything runs smoothly.
85 so years far. Young, Sam. I mean, episodes young.
No, this is only my fourth or fifth, I think.
All right, you're just an infant in the world of The Big Picture.
That's it. All right, let's get into the show. I want to know what we're watching this week at the cinema, Ben.
Please let me tell you, Sam, there is a film called I, Daniel Blake that's opened at cinemas. It won the top prize at the prestigious Cannes Film Festival this year. This is a kitchen sink British drama about working life issues involving disability payments. I believe that is a movie that won't be for everybody, but we're going to review it on the show next week, and basically because it got heaps of accolades and it sounds pretty interesting. Also out at cinemas this week, Arrival. It's a huge new sci-fi film, and we're going to be talking about it later in the show. But also at cinemas is another Amy Adams film. Amy Adams is in Arrival. Two Amy Adams films for the price of one this week, gentlemen, but it's
actually
something
not for the price of one.
Not for the price. Yes, we've actually paid for two. That's right. Very true. But Nocturnal Animals has also opened and is a different, totally different beast to Arrival. It's an adults-only thriller, co-stars Jake Gyllenhaal, Michael Shannon, Laura Linney, and we'll be talking about that on the program next week as well.
All right. What about on the small screen, Mark?
Have you ever wandered the streets of your suburb and gone, what possessed them to build something like that?
No, I quite like my suburb.
Oh, okay. Well, then you should move to the Hills District. Ooh, but basically, if you've ever wandered the streets and thought, why triple-fronted red brick?
Oh, I have thought that.
Okay. Or maybe the modern McMansion has left you wondering, okay? Actually, did you know that Australians now build the biggest houses on earth, 10% larger than the average American home?
Wow. Aussie.
Only you would be proud of it. Okay. If you're interested in that sort of stuff, well, Streets of Your Town will interest you. It's an ABC series. It's been running actually for a week so far, but you can still pick that up on iView and pick up the second episode this week, Tuesday, 8:30 p.m. Okay, it's hosted by Tim Ross. You might remember him as a radio announcer.
Rosso. Oh, American Rosso?
There you go. And he's also an architecture enthusiast. And so he's basically our tour guide for the exploration of how and why our suburbs look the way they do.
Is this just like Grand Designs Australia?
Well, actually, yes. It's got a bit of Grand Designs crossover. I don't want to give too much away, but it's actually good fun. Also, Dr. Foster comes to the ABC Thursday 17th this week, 8:30 p.m. Now, this is a really highly acclaimed five-part drama that had 10 million UK viewers for its finale. So it's already been commissioned as a second series. It looks like it's going to be great fun. Saran Jones, Scott and Bailey, you might remember from that, stars as Dr. Gemma Foster, a doctor of the Palminster Medical Centre, who seems to have the perfect life. You know, she's a trusted GP, happily married with a beautiful son, until one day she finds a blonde hair on her husband's scarf and the thriller unwinds. Okay, so this is well worth it if you're into thriller TV, and no one does it better than the Brits. Tune in this Thursday at 8:30 p.m. on the ABC.
And in entertainment news,
before I get to that, Sam, and Mark's just pointed out a couple of shows on ABC TV. Very soon on the show, we'll be talking about another ABC TV series called Rosehaven that I've been checking out recently and I highly recommend. That's coming up real soon. Okay, entertainment news is about someone I've never heard of, but apparently a lot of the world has. A YouTube sensation and Grammy Award nominee, Tori Kelly.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
That's a thing?
Yes.
She's a big thing?
Yeah, she is. Okay. And all the interwebs.
Well, then you will be happy to know, gentlemen, that she's heading to Australia to support the animated movie musical Sing that is coming out on Boxing Day. So she's going to be in Australia sometime soon to promote that movie. She's also going to be performing a track from the film on Channel 7's The X Factor finale show. For anyone who hasn't heard about Sing yet, it's about a koala called Buster with the voice of Matthew McConaughey, who's a koala presenter, entrepreneur guy, who basically puts on the world's greatest singing competition, and somehow that involves a lot of other animals voiced by Reese Witherspoon, Scarlett Johansson, and Tori Kelly that everybody else in this room knows but I've never heard of.
Well, I can top Tori Kelly's imminent arrival. The world's favourite sheep is back in Shaun the Sheep 2.
Whoa. How do you know it's the world's favourite sheep, Mark?
Name another one.
I don't know.
There you go.
Then yes, definitely.
I rest my case. Okay, of all the sheep that the world are interested in, Shaun seems to be on the tip of everybody's tongue. Shaun the Sheep Movie continues the production partnership with Aardman and Studio Canal following the success of Shaun the Sheep 2, of 1, okay, which is directed by Mark Burton and Richard Starzyk. I want to point out, actually, I fell asleep during that film. I was counting sheep during
Shaun the Sheep. Oh, I really liked it.
Yeah, I know. It's sort of like a different thing. Maybe I was too exhausted to appreciate it. And Shaun the Sheep 2, I'll appreciate more. But the film grossed $106 million worldwide, the first installment. So Nick Park is already ready to go with the second one. Also, you might remember Nick Park's got that prehistoric comedy adventure coming too, Early Man, that's in production.
All right, well, that is all the news you need. Now we need to get to the true or false for this week.
Ben, we do, Kevin. That's right, Sam. Before we get on to what your kids are watching, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, that J.K. Rowling new production, the author of Harry Potter, got me thinking about a true or false statement about Harry Potter. So here we go. Harry Potter, the book series, has inspired more copycat series of fantasy novels than any other book series ever, with about, at last count, 34 quote-unquote clones. True or false?
I'm going to say true.
Yeah? Are you, Sam?
I'm going to say at least.
Yeah.
We will find out the answer after this.
Well, speaking of Harry Potter, the franchise is one of those mountainous facts in cinematic history. 8 films released over 10 years, delivering more than $7.5 billion.
Is that all,
at the box office.
$7.5 billion.
That's right. And as an enjoyable ride as it may have been, many of us breathed a collective sigh of relief when it all finished.
I, for one.
But this week, another series about witches and wizards has appeared on the horizon that promises to be just as big and to run nearly as long. J.K. Rowling is back writing screenplays instead of novels this time, starting with Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
So, you're the guy with the case full of monsters, huh?
Use travels first.
Mr. Scamander, do you know anything about the wizarding community in America? We don't let things loose.
Hey, Mr. English guy, I think your egg is hatching.
You wiped his memory, right? The no magic.
The what?
No magic. The non-wizard.
Sorry, we call them muggles.
Back in the day when the Harry Potter movies were coming out each year, Mark and I would groan every year they came out. But I know most of the world didn't, right? They were really excited about
it.
They were lining up, that's right. But they were very hard to get into. There weren't that many previews of any of the Harry Potter movies. Yeah, we used to just go on the day of release usually, or the day before release, which I know it will be the same now for Fantastic Beasts, that it will be really difficult to see just before it comes out this week. But can you give us even a hint of the storyline, particularly for any of us like myself who know nothing about it?
Absolutely. Okay, so this series of films, and I say series, we'll talk a bit more about that later, but Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is set 70 years before Harry starts going to school. Okay, it's set in the 1920s, 1926 in fact, and it's about a key character called Newt Scamander. Eddie Redmayne plays him, okay, and if anyone knows anything about the Harry Potter universe, you'll know that Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is a book that Harry has to study, okay, by Newt Scamander. And so we're now getting into the backstory of this guy. He has a brief stopover in New York. He has a bag full of magical creatures he's been researching. And due to
why would he keep them in a bag?
Well, again, you know, if you know anything about the Harry Potter universe, you know that this sort of bags, you know, wonderful interdimensional bags that can be much, much larger on the inside.
So I'm such a silly muggle.
You are. And basically, he's transporting these creatures home to old Blighty to have a bit of study, okay? And in which case, somewhere through the middle of them, a muggle, or what they call a non-magic, a nomadge, sorry, in America. I think they made that just easier for Americans.
Nomadge.
As opposed to muggles. Anyway, a nomadge called Jacob, played by Dan Fogler, mucks around with the case a little bit. Some creatures get out, mayhem ensues, and et cetera, et cetera. Now we have ourselves a movie plot.
I'm getting confused just trying to keep up with this. But is this likely to be just a one-off feature, you know, like Rogue One that's coming up in December? Or it was definitely going to be part of something bigger.
It is definitely part of something bitter. Bitter.
I might be bitter about seeing it. I think other people will disagree.
Look, I just want to say to people, just sit down, strap yourself in for the next 10 years. Okay, because this is how it's been planned out. Now, the film itself is based on J.K. Rowling's companion book for the Harry Potter series, which generated £17 million worth of support for comic relief. But the first This is the first of five new Fantastic Beasts films that have been announced. J.K. Rowling is scripting them. David Yates is directing. So you might remember him. He already did the last four Harry Potters. Yeah. He's doing the first two in this new series.
He knows how to make a buck. David Yates, well played. Maybe we'll just make more of these movies.
And he's signed on for the sequel coming in 2018. And there are three more at least that have been announced coming out every 2 years after that. Hold on to your broomsticks. We're on the verge of another HP decade.
What kind of themes do you think these films are going to bring up, Mark?
Well, in the first film, it's pretty clear what we're dealing with. The film's story is built around four central characters. So you've got Newt Scamander, you've got two sisters, Porpentina or Tina Goldstein and her sister Queenie, who had to raise themselves. So start looking at this theme here. Newt was actually expelled from Hogwarts, okay, because of endangering other students, even though Dumbledore tried to get him to stay in, you know. Queenie and Tina are two girls who had to raise themselves. Jacob is a nomad, a muggle who's returned from the First World War and dreams of becoming a baker. You've got these sort of characters who are outsiders, and part of the journey of the film is each of them coming into their own, finding their place. It's a little similar in that respect if you think about Harry and Hermione, you know, and Ron. Outsiders who find their place despite the world being distinctly different. Now, this is really good for us as far as Christians are concerned, because our kids...
Why?
Well, our kids are entering into a decade where they are going to be outsiders. I mean, as we watch in the next decade, we're going to find it harder and harder for kids, you know, from Christian homes to line up what they're being taught at home with what they're being taught by the world and often what they're being taught in school. Okay, so they are going to be outsiders, but they're going to have to find their place. I, for one, actually like the idea that they're going to be these cinematic heroes who will not fit in, who believe different things to other people, who are going to have to basically stick to each other in the face of opposition all the way through. This is a great theme for a decade. Look, I look forward to taking my kids to it.
And you'll be taking your kids this week to Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which does star Eddie Redmayne, Colin Farrell, Catherine Waterston, Alison Sudol, and Dan Fogler. It's rated M for fantasy themes and violence, and it does opens on, Wednesday night, because if you're really keen, you can get to a midnight screening. Otherwise, for those of us who like to sleep in like myself, you'd go on Thursday.
Or you'll probably go through.
I probably won't, but plenty of people will. Speaking of Harry Potter and my love for Harry Potter, I posed a Harry Potter true or false just before we were talking about the latest in the Harry Potter universe. I stated Harry Potter's inspired more copycat series of fantasy novels than any other book series, with about, at last count, I think about 35 quote-unquote clones. Is that true or false?
No, I'm going with false, because that's just not enough.
Sam?
I'm going to say false as well.
It is definitely false, not for the reasons that Mark just said, just basically because I made it up. But Harry Potter has inspired more than 700,000 pieces of Harry Potter fan fiction, and a total that increases by at least 1,000 stories a week.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. So if you want more Harry Potter and even more material for more Harry Potter movies, check out the fan fiction online.
Mm. All right. Well, coming up on The Big Picture, we're going to start a fire in here. I'm saying metaphorical. Do not call the emergency departments. And we're going to prove once and for all that it's not uncool to move home as a grown man.
Welcome back.
Gentlemen, we're up to soundtrack choice for this week. Very soon on the show, I'm going to be talking about new ABC TV show Rose Haven, which is about a grown man who returns to his childhood home. And that's inspired our soundtrack choice for this week, because when you think about possibly returning to your childhood home, you might think about the chorus of this song.
Hold
Yeah, Burning Down the House by Talking Heads from their 1983 album Speaking in Tongues. Pretty much the only reason I play that song is because I think Talking Heads is one of the coolest bands on the planet, and just getting an excuse to play Burning Down the House, it kind of vaguely links to Rosehaven, the show we're about to talk about, and Going Home and that kind of thing. But I think that's the best white boy funk song ever. In case you don't know, David Byrne, the lead singer of that band, is white, and yet he sounds terribly James Brown in that song. But the movie and TV link, there is actually one. This song's been used in everything from 6 Feet Under to Gilmore Girls on TV. And on movies, Revenge of the Nerds to Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, which, come on, don't snigger about the fact it's been a Transformers movie. Just go back to the bit where Talking Heads are the smartest pop band that's ever existed, and we just play Burning Down the House.
True, true.
Well, it's been quite a year for a skinny gingerhead bloke named Luke McGregor. He's one of the stars of excellent Australian comedy series Utopia, which you might have seen on the ABC. McGregor has moved on from his intimate, awkward series about sex to a sea-change comedy about going home.
Listen, you're going overseas.
Tasmania.
Your mum's dying.
Having a minor back operation.
You're going to run her business and you're terrible at business.
Am I? Because she's asked my help and she's never done that before, so must think I've got some skills.
Make sure you use the white vinegar under the sink to clean the mould in the bathroom.
Yeah, Mum, that's more of a life tip. Is there anything work-related I can help you with today?
We're out of milk.
Oh, my God! The last three houses I went to thought I was a stripogram.
What are you doing here?
Oh, Tasmania had a particularly nice weather forecast this week. Hello.
Daniel's told me a lot about you over the years.
Oh! It's all lies.
I certainly hope so.
So this new ABC TV comedy, Rosehaven, stars Luke McGregor as Daniel. He's a guy who moves back home to Tasmania from the mainland to help his battle axe of a mother with her real estate business because she's going into hospital for an operation. Celia Pakula. Celia Pakula.
We got there in the end.
There we go. Celia Pakula is his best mate, Emma, who in the first episode flees from her honeymoon to go and hang out with her best mate, Daniel, in his hometown. She's effectively trying to escape from life. And then the next few episodes, as those eight-episode series goes on, is basically real estate-related adventures in small-town Tasmania.
Oh, mate. Luke McGregor, he's so hot right now.
He is a little bit hot right now.
What is it about him?
He's had three shows in the past year. And so if you've seen Utopia, you would have picked up on this gingerhead skinny guy. And Pakula was like his offsider in that show as well. They were both quite main characters in that show. But then Luke McGregor went out on his own and did Lukewarm Sex, which is this remarkably frank and kind of unpretentious and honest look at relationships.
It was a really good series.
And sex, it really was. And now he's back with Rosehaven. He and Pakula wrote this show. I think one of the best things about Rosehaven is the fact that people who are relatively nice and kind of straight comedians, people that don't try to push the envelope too much, are actually getting recognized and getting picked up for shows. Why McGregor's so hot right now, I think it's because he's kind of goofy and endearing and likable. He's this dweeby guy that you really want to be friends with, even though he's so dweeby. I think he carries it off very nicely, and he's been used well in these shows. If he keeps doing the same thing, I think we're going to get sick of it the more and more we see of him. But I kind of like the fact he's been around so much this year.
That's actually a fair point because, yeah, he's got a similar character, and this is actually not groundbreaking plot, you know, a guy going back to hometown. Why have you been enjoying it so much?
I think it's nice that it's nice. And I say that with some caution. So it's M-rated. And sadly, through the more the episodes go along, they punctuate the episodes with occasional swearing and sexual content that elevates it to more adult viewing. And it almost didn't need to be there. I don't know why they've thrown it in at times, because my wife, Amy, and I have been really getting into this show. I think because it is so politely amusing and it puts this smile on your face, it's very quaint about these goofy child adults that Pakula and McGregor play back in this town. And it's not Seinfeld exactly, where it's a show about nothing, but it's very close to that, where you're just observing people going back in amongst great scenery and measured side characters. You're getting them going back and kind of dealing with childhood issues as they are as adults. And they are just terrific together. The chemistry that this pair have on screen, it makes it worth watching enough, even though some episodes not terribly much happens. And you can watch all the past episodes on ABC iView. They're all backed up on there now. Well worth a watch.
Now, people joke a lot about people moving back home with their parents, but does Rosehaven say anything about, you know, helping your nearest and dearest going home?
It doesn't really make a big deal of it, even though the whole springboard for the show is Daniel going back home to help out his mum. But Daniel's this character who desperately wants his mum to be proud of him, and he's kind of craving her love and attention, and in the process of returning home, he's also kind of growing up as well of a lot of other childhood experiences, not just related with his mum. And so somehow I think Rosehaven is actually quite a nice little portrait of something that the Bible teaches very strongly, which is honoring your parents, honoring your father and mother. It's one of the commandments. It's constantly referred to throughout the Bible. And Rosehaven, I think, is a nice sort of charming, funny, real estate related reminder that when it comes to looking out for one another, when it comes to like loving your neighbor, when it comes to doing what's good for others, who would you start with? Why not start with your parents? Now, I don't know what you guys, your relationships are like with your parents. Mine's pretty good, but I know plenty of people don't have that. Mm-hmm. I get that. And I don't think Rosehaven's rubbing it in the face of people. It definitely isn't, because the relationship is a bit fractured between Daniel and his mum. But for anyone who doesn't have a good relationship with their parent, like you see in Rosehaven, and it's played for laughs at times, but there's a seriousness in there. For anyone who doesn't have a good relationship, I think Rosehaven is something of a reminder of, even if that's not the case, the default setting in the Bible is honoring your father and mother, because that's a right, proper, good thing to do. Maybe it's time, like Daniel in Rosehaven, to start living that out in your life. So that's just one of the byproducts from Rosehaven. The other one is, it just makes me chuckle. And for all the like adult content that does show up in the show, and for as repetitive as it can get about its dweebiness and really overplay its dweebiness, it's really, really funny. And I'm looking forward to Luke McGregor and Celia Pakola doing much more work on Aussie TV.
Okay, well, Rosehaven stars Luke McGregor, Celia Pakola, and the beautiful lush lands of small town Tasmania.
It's basically one long advertisement for Come Visit a Tasmania.
I wonder if there's some tourism grant in there somewhere. But okay, it airs each Wednesday on ABC One at 9 p.m. It's also available on iView straight after, and is rated M for coarse language and sexual references. Okay, so be aware of that. Ben said the language does rise, and the longer the show goes along, well,
yeah, that's right. It just ramps careful. Up a little bit, which I don't really understand why they did that. But that's what they're doing. All right, blokes, before we get on to the rest of the show, here's a public service announcement. People need to know this. On December 18, something massive is happening. What's that?
It is, in fact,
I was going to say I'm going to see Star Wars. I think there's something else.
Great, Sam. I was actually going to say something bigger than Star Wars is happening, and that would be the Eternals.
Indeed.
The Big Pictures Movie and TV Awards for 2016. This is the first time in human history that the Eternals has ever happened. We will be announcing the winners, and you can be part of this because you can vote for various categories in the Eternals. Go to thebigpicturewebsite.com. Go there right now, thebigpicturewebsite.com, and vote in a category such as, oh, how about Best Actress for this year? Now, you might be thinking,
Who would you like to give a box of chocolates to?
Who would that be? Would it be Maggie Smith in The Lady in the Van? Could it be Helen Mirren in Eye in the Sky? Or could it be someone younger and not British, maybe in the shape of Blake Lively in The Shallows?
Or what about Emily Blunt, Girl on the Train?
You
want to give her a good meal because she's been drinking too much in that.
She definitely has been. Or Kate Beckinsale in Love and Friendship. Whoever it might be, you can go and vote now. Thebigpicturewebsite.com. The Eternals being announced on December 18, and that's going to stop Sam from seeing Rogue One that night because he's going to be tuning in for it.
Yes, I'll be here. Come on.
You'll be tuning in for
I'll
it
be
here.
In the studio.
Tuning in for it here.
Wearing my gala best.
Mm.
Yes, absolutely. Well, coming up on The Big Picture, what do sharks, comedy, and Jesus have in common? And a very special guest reviewer joins us to talk about one of the biggest sci-fi films of 2016, Arrival.
Welcome back.
Now, you can tell that summer is getting closer and closer because more and more news about sharks has been washing up. See what I did there?
Mm-hmm.
Washing
up. I really saw what you did there.
Shark nets on the east coast of Australia have been a big deal of late, but we've netted a shark story that will make an even bigger splash. For Press Record this week, Ben spoke with Phil Watson, an animator who wants us to sink our teeth into the funny side of sharks.
Phil, sharks have actually inspired a great deal of creativity in you. What kind of creativity have they inspired?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, as a surfer, you're always thinking about sharks. And so I spent a lot of time thinking about sharks and I thought, you know what, I'm going to make fun of them from a drawing board.
What? Okay, please continue. Phil, go on.
Yeah, so I started drawing cartoons of sharks. So I've always been fascinated by them and and now I draw shark cartoons.
So where are your shark cartoons at? Where can we find them? And how much of the world have they taken over?
Oh, taken over? Well, that's obviously, you know, because I'm on the big picture, I'm at the top of my game here, so...
you've made it, Phil. You've finally arrived.
Yeah, so people can see it for themselves at shark.com. It's a shark with three A's, exactly as you'd say it if you saw one out there.
Shark!
Exactly, you wouldn't just say it's shark.
Okay, if we go to shark.com, what do we find?
Oh, you find the world's biggest collection of single panel shark cartoons and a few animated episodes as well.
The world's biggest collection of single paneled shark cartoons. Aren't you trying to get a TV show up as well?
Yeah, that's right. So I had plenty of discussions about it. And so I'm always plugging away at that. I look forward to one of these days putting it on TV. So maybe it'll be a kids show. Maybe it'll be slightly older kids. But yeah, keep watching.
Phil, you know a lot about sharks. You thought a lot about sharks. You spend a lot of time with sharks. What are some of your favourite shark moments in cinema history?
Great. Well, you can't get past Jaws.
You cannot.
The interesting thing is I recently did a shark cage dive at the Neptune Islands off Port Lincoln. And that's where they filmed the original Jaws footage. And I actually got...
Did they? You mean Port Lincoln in South Australia?
Yeah, that's where they filmed the original, the underwater shark sequences.
Oh.
I got to work with Valerie Taylor, who was one of the... Ron was her husband. But Valerie Taylor did one of the voices for one of my shark episodes. So I got to hang out with her and hear about that whole experience and shark cage diving. And so that was phenomenal. So Jaws, can't beat it. Although Jaws 3, just don't waste your time.
But that was the one in 3D, Phil. How could you not care? That was filmed in 3D.
It's really bad. Like, it's just, it's literally, you know, whatever minutes of your life you won't get back. And don't, take it from me, don't bother.
But then do any others get two fins up?
Two fins up? Well, you know what? Like, I started watching things like Sharknado and I really just gave up because I'm just not really into seeing sharks badly with bad CG attacking people, and I prefer sort of comedy, so I'm not a fan of those ones.
But wasn't Sharknado meant to be a comedy? Which brings me on to a final question. I've been dying to ask you this, Phil. So if we go to shark.com, we will find comedy and sharks in the same place. You're into both of those things. You're also a Christian. What is up with all of that? How do all those things go together?
It's a very good question. It's not like God has these separate parts of the world and they don't overlap. I just believe God made sharks and he made them for a reason. And I just find them fascinating. I find them incredibly graceful. And yeah, they're fearful, but they're just incredibly beautiful when you look at them. And I think God's got his fingerprint in everything he does, including comedy. And so when you sort of say, what's the deal with that? I'm like, well, why not? Because they're beautiful. Comedy's awesome, and this is the position that I'm in. I love doing comedy centered around shark cartoons.
Phil, thanks very much for joining us on The Big Picture.
No worries, Ben, and mate, just keep laughing at sharks.
Well, we are counting down to something that's happening in about a month's time.
Christmas.
Not Christmas.
Not Christmas.
Something a bit exciting, though. Star Wars Rogue One, or Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah.
But if you can't wait that long till that sci-fi release, there's another one that's just hit cinemas called Arrival, starring Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner. And it's a close encounter with the universal language of communication.
8 hours after landing, there's still no signs of first contact. The objects measure at least 1,500 feet tall.
Mama, what's going to happen?
I don't know.
More objects like this have landed around the world.
Dr. Banks.
I'm Colonel G.T. Weber. You are on the top of everyone's list when it comes to translations. I have something I need you to translate for me.
Is that...
Sam, Arrival is such a big deal that we've got a special guest in the studio to review Arrival for us. Adrian Drayton, Managing Editor of Insights. Adrian, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
That's good to hear. Now, as Sam just mentioned, there is a new Star Wars film coming out, Rogue One. You're a massive Star Wars fan, massive. You've got about, by last count, 55 Star Wars t-shirts, but you're here to talk about Arrival. Why are you here to talk about Arrival? I thought you'd be like joining us later for Rogue One.
Well, I don't really like to hide my light under a bushel re-Star Wars.
No, but, you do not.
No, but I am a big fan of intelligent sci-fi, and I'm going to call this fairly early. This is probably my favourite film for the year.
What? Arrival?
Ooh. Yeah.
Yep.
So I call it early. Aside from, you know, that date that looms ahead of us,
yeah, yeah.
December 15,
yeah.
It's just a yeah, one of the most intelligent science fiction films I've seen in a while, and I'm a big fan of intelligent,
so,
big concept science fiction
films. Okay, now I've seen the trailers for Arrival, and it just struck me as another alien invasion movie. Is that right?
Yes, I think if you're wanting to go expecting, is it Alien, what was the Insurgents?
Resurgence. Independence Day. Independence Day, yep.
Resurgence.
So if I'm expecting that.
If you're expecting that, lower your expectations. There's no kind of huge explosions and massive sort of aliens galloping along the landscape. It's more of I think they use the alien invasion concept as sort of like a little container for this story they're telling about how language can connect us as humans.
So you're saying that Arrival is more about language and communication than anything else. Is that right?
Pretty much.
So why are they selling this then as an alien invasion movie? Just because we will recognize that as viewers and go along to see it? Or is it too difficult to sell this movie based on what it's actually about?
I think Interstellar and Gravity... It's one of those movies that is set in space and has a lot of big concepts, and it's quite hard to sell to people. Like when you're putting a trailer together, you want to put the most interesting parts of it. But for me, the most interesting parts of the film are what it talks about in terms of all sorts of linguistic concepts.
Because, linguistic concepts.
Yeah. So the main character is a woman called Louise Banks, played by Amy Adams. Basically, she is called by the government to decode an alien language. So 12 pods land on Earth.
Okay. Do they all land in America? Because that always seems to happen in movies.
No, one even lands in Australia.
Oh.
They do a map.
Yes.
It's quite interesting. But the one that she's most interested in lands in Montana. She goes with Jeremy Renner, who's a science expert. So he basically tells her science can explain everything. She says that's not the case. She doesn't believe that's the case. And then basically we get into the movie. Now, the problem with this film is I don't want to reveal too much about the film because I think people need to experience it for themselves, I suppose.
Okay. So is there much else you can share with us? Because you're rating this up so high that it might be the best film of the year.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the beauty of the film for me is it's not necessarily about someone saving the world, but it is. It's also, like, I'm going to use a Shrek reference here. It's kind of like an onion. So
Shrek and Arrival in the same sentence.
You know, science fiction and Shrek in the same sentence. But anyway, the concept of alien invasion and this sort of whole other concept that's in the film, which is about our connection to one another and our connection to something outside ourselves, is really interesting. So I think what struck me most about the film is there's a very fleeting reference to a hypothesis called the Sapir-Whorf hypothesis, which is significant in communication theory because it poses the idea that language determines how we think, and it suggests that full immersion in a foreign language might actually change our neural pathways.
Those are big words, Adrian.
Yeah, and I'll keep going because I keep powering through it. And the person learning the language might begin to dream and think in that other language as they learn it. So it's a concept in linguistics and cognitive science that suggests language affects its speaker's cognition and worldview.
Okay. What do you think all of that boils down to?
I think pretty much all that boils down to, for me, as I've been thinking about some of the themes in it as a Christian, is when we become a Christian, we read the Bible, we have come to a relationship with Christ, we kind of immerse ourselves in reading the Bible, we talk to other people about Christianity, and it does change our worldview. And similarly, in this film, that Amy Adams' character's worldview is quite drastically changed by her encounters with aliens, basically.
Wow, mate. So the number one film of your year, managing editor of Insights, Adrian Drayton, Arrival, stars Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, Forest Whitaker. It opened at cinemas last Thursday, November 10, and it's rated M for mature themes and coarse language. Adrian, before you go, here's just a quick promo for more of your work. If you go to insights.uca.org.au, you will discover more of the thoughts and writings and musings of Adrian Drayton, as well as Big Picture regular Russ Matthews. The guys check out the latest movies like we do every week, and they give a different spin on it. So go to insights.uca.org.au for that. Welcome back.
Every week you get the opportunity to listen to us say good things about film and TV, but what about your chance, I say? So why don't you go over and be part of the Eternals, the award show where you basically vote up, or down for that matter, some of the things that are actually really worth seeing this year, or not. Okay, go to the bigpicturewebsite.com where you will find such categories as best spiritual lesson. Which film delivered the best spiritual lesson for you, Ben?
So you mean best spiritual lesson, like it doesn't have to necessarily be a faith-based movie or Christian movie.
Yeah, it may not be a Christian film.
Oh, right. Then movies like on the list, like Money Monster, I found pretty strong on the front of like challenging greed and how deep greed goes. Big lesson there. Or something like The Witch, which actually dealt with a lot of Christian themes. It's not a Christian movie, but for me this year, it was probably the best film to do with a fight against the devil. If you want to watch a movie about a fight against the devil, learn something spiritual lesson-wise about that, The Witch. You could vote for that.
You could go and vote for that. What about you, Sam?
I think Hail Caesar for me.
Yeah, good call.
I really enjoyed that film. It's one of my favourites of the year, I'd say. And the way that it depicted Jesus and conversation about him, I thought was quite good.
So you should go over to look at the Eternals on thebigpicturewebsite.com and cast your vote digitally or otherwise. I don't know how you do it otherwise.
Is there an otherwise?
You can put it on a napkin and send it into us or something like that.
We'll gladly receive napkins.
Okay. But that's all on thebigpicturewebsite.com. Head over there now.
All right. It is top five time, and we're about to get an education into world language or something like that, because it's got something to do with our top five. Mark.
Indeed. This week I've been set the topic, since we've been talking about communication, of the top five foreign languages I want to learn courtesy of Hollywood. So let's begin.
Five.
Ever heard of that little film called Blade Runner from 1982?
Rings a bell.
Okay, well, in that film, they actually, Edward James Olmos actually devised a modern speech, which is the collision of all sort of languages and cultures, called street speak. Okay,
who's Edward James Olmos? Well, is he the actor in the film?
He was actually in the film. Yeah, he played the role called Gaff, this character. Okay,
yeah.
And so, anyway, in the film, he creates this sort of city speak, gutter talk, mishmash of Japanese, Spanish, and German, and what have you. And it's this crazy language that it works really as a sort of a script device because it sounds so familiar and yet is still completely incomprehensible.
And you'd like to learn this mashup of languages?
I would indeed. It sounds so cool and yet incomprehensible.
Four.
But nothing like Martian. Martian from Mars Attacks in 1996, okay? So Tim Burton has an A-list cast of Mars Attack characters in a hysterical take on what happens when the aliens actually arrive. And unlike previous movies, these Martians are actually really invading Earth for kicks, you know, to have some fun and a sort of, you know, merciless attack on human beings. They slaughter high-ranking officials at will, and they seem to have great times basically blowing up doves and stuff like that. Great film to watch, but there's a language in it, the Martians. Now, when the scriptwriters were actually writing this film, they didn't really know what the Martian language would sound like.
They didn't send a probe to Mars and find out.
They thought, unwisely, that somebody later would come in and fill this in for them. So all they did in the script was write ack, 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 ack every time the Martian spoke. But when it came to actually recording the dialogue, the actors who were given the job of doing the Martians just went, oh, ack, 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 and that's Martian. Okay? And I think that's fantastic because it's the easiest language from Hollywood to learn.
Three.
But nothing like, you know, if you want to go for easy, let's go to difficult, the most difficult language to learn from Star Wars, droid.
Okay. Ah.
Clearly R2-D2 is speaking some comprehensible language which Luke Skywalker and others can understand, and yet somehow the rest of us just hear it as a series of whistles and beeps and whatever. But droid, or binary, as the aficionados of particularly Star Wars like to refer to it as, these whistles and beeps actually have a system to them. So not just someone just hitting random buttons on a synthesizer.
Someone did create it. Was it George Lucas or somebody else? And it's an actual language.
It's an actual language, and if you doubt this, you can
go. I am skeptical.
Go to r2d2translator.com where you'll be
Of course there is.
You'll be able to type in any. I've tried things like I have a pizza on my head, and r2d2 will tell us. There's also a wonderful collection there of the many varied sound moods. which R2-D2 has been in.
What do you mean?
During the entire extravaganza that is Star Wars, R2-D2 has expressed various moods through his language. So you can listen to R2-D2 talking to himself. R2-D2, determined. R2, concerned. R2, excited. R2, very excited.
That's very different to excited.
R2, shocked, which is a little bit different. R2, unsure. R2, proud. And my personal favourite, R2, sassy. Okay, but when we get into serious movie languages...
Oh, we hadn't got there already. I thought R2 sassy. That was the most serious we were going to be.
We're now reaching languages that people take very, very seriously when it comes to Hollywood. And none more serious, or probably only one more serious than Elvish from The Lord of the Rings. Okay, so from 2001 to 2003, J.R.R. Tolkien actually was a language expert. Okay, so that's actually what he was doing at Oxford University. And he created a number of constructed languages that still fascinate people today because they work as languages. In fact, it was a lifelong occupation of his starting in his teens. Okay, he started creating Dwarvish and Elvish and all these sorts of things.
So he wasn't just about studying languages, he was just about inventing his own.
Yeah, so literally he was actually inventing languages that he theorized could have existed, because there's an interesting thing about English etymology, study of language and words and stuff like that, that, you know, they've actually lost most of the ancient language that used to exist in Britain, okay? So he was an expert in this, and he thought to himself, you know, this is what I think it would sound like.
Might as well have a crack.
So he created Elvish and a group of languages related to it. And basically, he went on and on to do that. People got so obsessed that now you can actually learn to speak fluent Elvish today from the Council of Elrond.
In the real world, we're talking about not Middle Earth.
An official degree from the Council of Elrond, who believe that it is impossible to fully appreciate Tolkien without at least a basic understanding of his languages. Okay, and if you study hard enough, you can eventually qualify to join the Elvish Linguistic Fellowship. Yes, such a society exists.
One.
My personal favourite. Coming in at number one, the best language ever created by Hollywood is, of course, Klingon. Okay? The Klingon
Not surprised.
Is the constructed language spoken by the fictional characters, or are they, in the Star Trek.
No, we went there. They're fictional, Mark.
In the Star Trek universe, or our universe. Anyway. Developed by American linguist Mark Ockren. This is actually developed by a linguist who originally worked on Native American languages, okay? And he was hired by Paramount Pictures to develop the Klingon language and coach the actors using it so it would be consistent throughout the many, 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 many films.
Because that's what we need is consistency with the Klingon.
Okay. Ockren then went on to become such an aficionado in Klingon that he wrote several books, including The Klingon Dictionary, The Klingon Way, Klingon for the Galactic Traveller. He also has done two audio courses, Conversational Klingon.
Because I've often wondered what would happen the day I meet a Klingon, how will we strike up a conversation?
Well, you will probably want to use his second audiobook, my personal favourite, Power Klingon.
Is that for business dealings with Klingons?
He's trying to strike a deal. Now, with Klingons, you need to use Power Klingon. He's also co-authored the libretto of an opera in the Klingon language, so you can sort of relax to listening to Klingon. I don't think there's anything relaxing about clinging. There are a small number of people who are actually capable of conversing in Klingon. However, since its vocabulary is heavily centered on spacecraft and hand-to-hand combat, it actually is a little cumbersome for day-to-day use. But let me offer this. Look to chach wood loot temgas kach ne. Which means my hovercraft is full of eels. Obviously, it's very hard to apply that day to day, but let me give you a sample of Klingon in action.
Talk, he, humapu, hashtisach.
Pok mo baklikawa. Edge, chivotne, chimume. Koble bang sho, chukleje.
Oh, those Klingons.
Made total sense. I thought you sounded like a native Klingon in comparison to that clip.
I have had my forehead ridges removed for this show.
All right. Well, it is time to call it a day on the show tonight, sadly. But coming up next week, another unusual sci-fi outing in the shape of Morgan.
We're going to have Morgan on the show next week. And I, Ben McKechnie, shall introduce us to Daniel Blake.
And Amy Adams arrives again in the adults-only thriller Nocturnal Animals.
Next week, I won't be Daniel Blake. I'll just be Ben McKechnie.
No, I think I'll be Mark Hadley. We'll see you then.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's word into every corner of your world.